right, everyone, welcome to the Wednesday, September 6th meeting of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. Can we get a roll call, please?
Director Karen Bright?
Here.
Director Karen Ray Russell?
Here.
Director Linda Austin?
Here.
And would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, that takes us to agenda review. Anyone have any reason to change anything on the agenda this evening?
No.
Then we shall proceed, and let's go straight to public comment on items not appearing on tonight's agenda. This is your chance to come talk to this board about anything within our jurisdiction, and please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less and address the board as one body. If you'd like to come forward and speak on something not on tonight's agenda, please do so now. And seeing no one, we'll go ahead and close public comment. We'll move on to our consent agenda. This is item 5. Tonight we have the approval of warrants and the approval of meeting minutes of August 2nd, 2023. Do we have any questions of staff?
No.
And none from me, so let's open up public comment. Would anyone like to come forward on items 5A or 5B? Seeing no one, will close public comment and bring that back to the board for consideration.
I make a motion that we approve the consent agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
We have a motion to second. Can we get a roll call, please?
Director Karen Bright?
Yes.
Director Karen Ray Russell?
Yes.
Director Linda Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right, we are speeding quickly towards item 6A. This is the wastewater treatment project, redundancy project, secondary clarifier damage update. And I presume we'll go to Mr. Gent.
Yes, good evening, Jeremy Gent, district administrator. So an update tonight, as we talked about at the August 2nd meeting, we had an issue with the newly constructed secondary clarifier. And so since that board meeting, the district's investigation has analyzed five different potential causations for the concrete failure. And after the analysis, we've narrowed our focus down to two potential contributing factors to the failure. I'll talk about the ones that have largely been ruled out. So you can have an unforeseen site condition. And so as of today, there's no evidence that there was any unforeseen site condition or a changed site condition that would have created this failure in the floor of the clarifier. Another causation could be like an act of God or a natural disaster, such as an earthquake or some other type of catastrophe. None of those were documented or of concern. And then construction defect. I say largely ruled out because there's still the potential for something to come up during the investigation, but the further investigation. But the most likely construction defect that was being looked at is something called a cold joint. And so that's when the concrete, as you're pouring it, begins to set up before the next load comes in. And so M&S, our construction inspector, has records of all the concrete trucks that came in and the time each load was placed. So we've reviewed all that, and there's no evidence that the contractor's method for putting down the contract would have created any type of cold joint. So we've looked at that. We've shared that information with the contractor and the designer, and everybody's largely in agreement that's not likely a cause. So now I'll move on to some of the potential causes. So a potential material failure. So project team has identified a missing additive from the concrete mix. I spoke to this briefly at the last meeting. And so that additive was missing from the concrete in the floor of the clarifier. And so that additive is intended to reduce shrinkage of the concrete. And if excessive shrinkage happens, obviously that can lead to cracking in the concrete. So currently we're running laboratory tests to see how that concrete performs without the shrink reducing agent. We didn't have that data because what we had, they submitted stuff, an approved mixed design for their concrete that included the shrink reducing agent, but what was delivered and placed in the clarifier did not include that shrink reducing agent. And while that's not a required additive, that there was a performance spec in the specification that the shrinkage could only be 0.04%. So that's what we're trying to document now, is how much shrinkage does the concrete have without the agent in it. And so that test is getting ready to get underway. MKN has distributed the test method to the contractor and the designer and the construction inspector to get comments or any concerns on the method that's being done. It's a standard ASTM test, and so we don't expect many comments on that, but Earth Systems will begin that test, and it'll take about 35 days for us to get those results back after it's started. And I do want to note, it's possible that the shrinkage met without the additive, so it's not like this missing. We can't say for sure that there's a performance issue yet until we get these results back. So the fifth potential issue was a potential design error. So the district, in conjunction with MKN and SSG Smith Structural Group, it's a local structural firm that MKN brought onto the team to do a third-party review of Kennedy Jenks' design for the secondary clarifier. Their review revealed some questions around the adequacy of the design and the thickness of the floor slab, specifically the slab's ability to resist hydrostatic uplift. And Kennedy Jenks is currently in the process of clarifying their design and responding to the questions on their third-party review. So some next steps. We expect to have a full understanding of the design adequacy by the middle of the month. Kennedy Jenks emailed us today and said that they're working on responding to all the comments that SSG made. And then once it's determined whether the design's adequate or inadequate, that's when we can start developing appropriate repair strategies. On the material issue, the staff expects to get the concrete analysis by like around the end of the month, and the longer time frame is just due to the concrete has to cure for 28 days before they can take the actual measurement, so that there's just time built into the test method. And then we were looking into, I state here that staff is in the process of measuring hydrostatic pressure underneath the slab to better understand the current forces in that slab is experiencing. We have ran into a little bit of issue with how to best do that. And so I stated that we're in the process, and that's not entirely true. We're kind of now back to trying to figure out how to best take an accurate measurement of that if we can. And then that's just so we can understand how much force is being applied to the floor and trying to. And I'll pause for a second just so when I say uplift. So this is an empty container, and I know Director Bright wasn't at the last meeting, but so this is an empty cylinder container that's about 12 feet into the ground. And it's currently empty. And so since we have high groundwater at the site, that tank is basically trying to float. Like if you're just imagine pushing a 5-gallon bucket down into a swimming pool, right? And if it's empty, you can feel that force. And if you can imagine the bottom of the bucket if the plastic at the bottom was too thin, you could imagine a bulge coming up in the bottom of that bucket as you push down. And that's the type of hydrostatic uplift that's applying pressure to the floor of the clarifier and potentially causing that floor to crack and open up and allow the groundwater to come in. And then additionally, we'll come back at every board meeting and continue to update you on the status of what's going on. And we'll likely have to talk about this in other venues as well, because it's definitely headed in because there's a potential material failure, which would be a contractor responsibility, and a potential design failure, which would be the designer's responsibility. That split makes moving forward a little bit difficult, because there's going to be debate on which one of them picks up what share of that, if that continues to be true. So all that being said, we do have an issue here. We one of the other issues that's still outstanding is even when we figure out like who's responsible for what, we still have to get to work on what the repair strategy would be. At this point, we don't know that we can just patch the crack and move on. That we don't believe that's the case, and it's going to be a more extensive correction than just sealing the crack and putting it back into service. So this effort's going to continue on for a while. And with that, that completes my staff report, and I'm happy to answer any questions your board might have.
All right, let's see if we do. Any questions?
Yes, please. Just a couple.
Thank you for that information. So then, if I understood you correctly, that additive that wasn't included was not within the wasn't specified in the documents, but a percentage of shrinkage was.
Correct. So yeah, the percentage of shrinkage was allowed to be a maximum of 0.04%. Why the shrink reducing agent is relevant is the contractor was required to provide us an approved mix design from the concrete plant, and that mix design that they provided us to show that the concrete was adequate did include the SRA, the shrink reducing agent.
Okay.
But what ultimately went into the ground did not, and that's why it's relevant.
Very good. And then regarding the pressure, the hydrostatic pressure, were there specifications, I imagine there were, within the documents that for them to allow for that type of pressure, correct?
Yes, it was very specific that the design intent was to analyze the tank with the tank being empty and actually a full flood event, a 100-year flood event. And so we're not seeing anywhere that would be, so it's experiencing about 7 feet of, that's called head. 7 feet of head is relevant to, is coordinates to pressure. And so 7 feet of water pushing up on that, the bottom of that tank. And the design was closer to 18 feet that it was intended to be able to withstand.
Gotcha. I understand. Okay. Well, those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Those are my questions. I just wanted to, the measuring, how do you measure the hydrostatic pressure is the water underneath coming?
Yeah, so, I mean, one way that it's pretty basic that was being considered was through the slab, it's a 10-inch thick piece of concrete, we just drill like a 1-inch diameter hole through the entire 10-inch slab, and then install what's called a sight glass, just a piece of 1-inch plastic tubing that stands vertically, and then if you seal that off in the floor, the water would begin to fill up that sight glass, and you could measure how many feet that was, and that once you know it's 7 feet and you know the weight of water is 62.4 pounds per cubic foot, you just multiply the two together and get the pressure.
That's it. Everything's pretty well explained.
I had exactly the same two sets of questions. So the only thing I have left is the last time we talked about that, the possibility of repairing the crack, and one of the things that you mentioned was, the repair compound would last longer than the concrete would. And that's what I passed on to my council, but it sounds like that's changed since then.
Sure. So yes, when a crack repair is appropriate, that material is stronger than the concrete. The primary concern now is that we have cracking. We've had additional cracking since then, and then it's really centered. The structural concern is that the concrete is displaced. It's moved. It's lifted. And so, if it were just a crack allowing water in, then a crack repair could very likely be the most appropriate option. But with the structural movement of the tank, that implies a larger structural issue that we want to understand before we come to any conclusion on what the repair should be.
And so you said to Director Bright that it was designed for 18 feet and yet here we are with seven and we're seeing problems. That seems to imply a material problem, but I'm no engineer, so.
Right, so certainly in the third party review, there were some issues numerically and quality control issues with Kennedy Jenks design. And so through that review, Kennedy Jenks now has to defend and explain their design, and they may or may not be able to. They did have a feature in the tank that was supposed to assist creating the maximum pressure only equivalent to 4 feet. And this is getting a little bit detailed, but basically they have some pressure reliefs in the walls of the tank to let water in. But it comes in at a very slow pace. So it's not really doing anything to relieve the pressure on the tank. And so that's one of the issues that makes it somewhat difficult to fully say that it's the design, because they did make an attempt at putting a feature in that would reduce the pressure when this situation is occurring. But even then, we're only seeing that 7 feet today, and it's doing that. And we're not even sure if the design was appropriate for 4 feet.
Oh, goodness gracious.
So that's the issue right now. And I want to, just like the last meeting, I want to continue to say Kennedy Jenks still has the ability to respond and explain their design to us. And I don't want to speak that if it's flawed, because that determination hasn't been made yet. But our third party did have some very concerning questions and needed clarification on several items.
So two more questions. The last time we had concrete curing at the time of our last meeting. So do we have to do it again?
No. I did state that the test was underway, but Eileen told me after the meeting that there was an issue, like we couldn't just move forward with the standard test method, and they wanted to route it through everybody so that everybody had buy-in on the method that was being used, since we were doing it on our own side, because we wanted to have ownership of that kind of independent party review. You don't want the contractor or the designer kind of overseeing that work, because
they're absolutely. Okay, and then thank you for the clarification. And then finally, I could certainly foresee the protracted legal battle between those two entities, especially if both of them are partially at fault. It's a question of how much they're each at fault, and that's something that can take a very long time to untangle. So in the meantime, how do we get our project done?
That's exactly the questions we're going to have to work with legal counsel to figure out. If this were all a contractor issue, the contract documents are very clear on how we would proceed to continue and complete the contract. Adding the design issue in, that's a different approach, and there's really no direct way to get money from Kennedy Jenks. Now, on the last two calls we've had with KJ, they said that they will stand behind their design, and so they're acknowledging that if there is an issue, that they will do what's right to correct it. Now, I don't want to imply anything else than that, because it was just that statement was, if there's a flaw in our design, we'll stand behind and do what's right. So they're at least, everyone's still amicable at this point, but this is going to be a large dollar amount, so it's going to involve attorneys.
Okay, all right, so we can expect closed sessions in the future, in the
yes.
very near future.
Yes.
Got it. Okay, thank you very
May
much.
I ask one more
Please
question?
Do.
Thank you. So in construction contracts, we have performance bonds and that sort of thing, but with a professional contract, is that not the case?
So I may defer a little bit to Mr. Collins a little bit. So they do have insurance. All of our contracts require insurance. So we at least have $2 million of coverage from Kennedy Jenks as a named insured. In addition to that, professional engineers in most states, including the state of California, are required to carry errors and omission insurance, which is an additional insurance that for professional liability. And so I don't know which would be primary, which would be secondary, or even if it would only be one or the other, right, just because I'm not fully versed in.
I get it, and yeah. I don't need to know that at this point in time. I was just trying to ascertain if, in fact, there is some protection there, and it sounds like there is. So
yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other further questions?
So is the Smith Structural Group, that's the third party?
Correct, yes. They're a local structural firm.
All right, great. So that ends our questions. So we'll open up public comments, see if anyone would like to come forward on this item, 6A. And seeing no one, we'll close public comment. And this is a receive and file, so there's no action for us to take at this time. So we'll move forward to item 6B. This is approving and authorizing a district administrator to enter into a professional services agreement with Michael K. Nunley and Associates Incorporated to perform a trunk sewer collection system capacity evaluation and sanitary sewer management plan update.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, but I'm going to have Mr. Jones deliver this staff report.
Good evening, ladies of the board. Michael Jones, plant superintendent. The item before you today is for your approval and authorization for the district administrator to enter into a professional services agreement with Michael K. Nunley and Associates, Inc. to perform a trunk sewer collection system capacity evaluation and sanitary sewer management plan update. Staff's recommendation is to approve and authorize the district administrator to enter.
Just 1 second. Do we got something going on? Oh, it's just outside? Okay, got it. Just want to make sure we don't have something crazy going on. All right, no, thank you. Forgive me.
No problem. So staff's recommendation is to approve and authorize the district administrator to enter into professional service agreement with Michael K. Nunley and Associates, Inc. in the amount of $99,488 and authorize the district administrator to approve a specific contingency for the project up to 10%, $9,949 of the total project amount for a total potential amount of $109,437. Some background and discussion. In 2011, the district completed an inflow and infiltration study that included observations about potential sources of inflow and infiltration into the district's trunk sewer collection system. Sewer flow estimates for all three member agencies' collection systems and flow monitoring data analysis and recommendations for future monitoring efforts. Following the conclusion of the study, it was recommended to perform additional flow monitoring within the Arroyo Grande flow basin, and more specifically in the city of Arroyo Grande flow basin, develop a flow monitoring location plan aimed at reducing the overall basin into smaller, more manageable basins that could identify areas which show a high prevalence of INI and exclude areas that do not warrant additional subsequent field testing. Implement techniques that provide information relative to on-trunk and off-trunk source locations. Isolate flow contributions that may be originating from the Arroyo Grande Creek between manhole C20 and C20A. Coordinate with city staff to utilize city sewer lift station data in conjunction with future flow monitoring data to identify INI source locations more thoroughly in the city of Grover Beach flow basin. This basin observed minimal INI for the majority of the flow monitoring session and exhibited inflow only during larger storm events. Additional flow monitoring is not warranted at this time for this basin. However, estimated flows based on population could not be validated for the Grover Beach and Oceano areas, and it was recommended to review additional information to develop flow estimates that could be compared to measured flow from the flow meters during dry weather conditions. In the Oceano flow basin, develop a flow monitoring location plan aimed at reducing the overall basin into smaller, more manageable basins, which could identify areas which show a high prevalence of INI and exclude areas that do not warrant additional subsequent field testing. Implement techniques that provide information relative to on-trunk and off-trunk source locations. Evaluate per capita municipal water usage against per capita sewer contributions to determine if elevated per capita sewer contributions observed in this study are repeatable, and if so, evaluate likelihood of potential long-term groundwater infiltration currently being recognized as base sewer flow. Also coordinate with OCSD staff to initiate manhole inspections in areas where inflow was observed during field investigation efforts. In addition to the INI study, the last capacity evaluation of the district's trunk sewer collection system was completed in 2004. A thorough capacity evaluation is needed to develop the capital improvements program focused on addressing capacity deficiencies under existing and future flow conditions and or implementing improvements for reducing INI into the trunk sewer system. In conjunction with the INI study and capacity evaluation, a sewer system management plan update is needed to capture all findings and to bring the district into compliance with the new State Water Resources Control Board General Order number 2022-0103-DWQ. So with this effort, the district can expect an outcome to meet regulatory compliance through updating the district's SSMP, understand the capacity of the district's trunk mains by member agency, identify potential sources of inflow and infiltration by member agency, identify needs for both repairs and upgrades to the district's collection system in order to continue to meet development needs of the member agencies. The scope of work consists of the following tasks. We have Task Group 100, which is meetings, project management, and QA/QC. Task Group 200, wastewater treatment plant flow summary. Task Group 300, member agency baseline and future flow estimates. 400, member agency lift station information. 500, dry weather flow monitoring session. 600, peak dry weather flow monitoring session. 700, which is wet weather flow monitoring session. 800, a capacity evaluation. 900, preparation of the sewer system management plan update. All task groups are further described in the attached proposal for engineering services by Michael K. Nunley and Associates Incorporated. Some fiscal considerations. Staff recommends using Fund 19-8015 trunk sewer maintenance for this project. This study was not included in the 2023 fiscal year budget. Staff will bring back a budget adjustment at the mid-year budget review. And with that, that concludes my report. I'm able to answer any questions the board may have.
Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, when you say that on the Oceano Flow Basin, develop a flow monitoring location plan aimed at reducing the overall basin into smaller, more manageable basins, what does that mean?
So essentially, we're going to take the previous study that occurred in 2011 and based on the recommendations. So there's a bunch of just think of like your sewer collection system. There's a bunch of piping in Oceano and tributaries. So you have certain areas that could.
So is that what this is here? This is all
the lines?
Yeah,
that's a full map of the district trunk sewer system.
Okay.
So you have certain tributaries that could have INI inflow and infiltration. And basically, some areas might not have INI, so we're just going to focus on areas that have INI.
Okay. And then you go to you take cameras in the manholes?
What's that? Cameras
in the manhole?
For inspection, yeah, yeah. But this we'll have flow meters to measure flow.
So you measure it at different areas, or just as it comes in? I'm not quite following.
So
where do you put the flow meters?
In the manholes.
Okay.
Yeah, and they'll measure way they measure.
Okay, I get it now. Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
okay, sorry.
Yeah.
I guess yeah. Okay, that's all I had.
Any questions?
Yes, I have. Again, I guess it's just to help me understand things. Mm-hmm. So under the City of Grover Beach flow basin, when it says estimated flows based on population could not be validated for Grover Beach and Oceano, it was recommended to review additional information. So are you saying that, well, maybe you can explain that to me.
Yeah, I think based on, say, the population, the amount of wastewater flows we're receiving, it doesn't kind of correlate. So what we want to look at is additional information like lift station hours of and water usage.
So you do intend to get that information, it's just in a different,
correct,
different way.
Okay. Yes.
Excellent, thank you. Thank you.
We've all asked the same question three times, so I'm going to ask it in a different way. Because yes. I didn't get it that time and I didn't get it that time. What's the problem?
we're trying.
Are we getting too much water for what we expect to get?
Exactly. So okay. Primarily during like wet weather, we'll see excessive flows. And so that water's coming from somewhere, and it's called inflow and infiltration. So inflow is basically water that comes into the sewer pipe through, say, illicit connections to the sewer line or manhole covers. If people remove manhole covers, we get excessive flow during storm events.
So we're trying to identify where is this coming in
exactly.
And who's responsible for it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. That's helpful. And then it would appear that, based on the staff report here, that this is coming from AG, at least if I'm reading that properly.
I think from the previous report, I think it was primarily Arroyo Grande and Oceano.
Okay.
But I think some more investigation is needed to kind of pinpoint where it's coming from.
So why are we doing this now, and wasn't it in the budget? What prompted this to come outside of there? I saw your mic.
The fiscal consideration statement isn't entirely accurate. So what I budgeted was just a capacity analysis of our trunk sewer system, and that was tied to Grover Beach's effort to do their sewer system master plan. And they identified a section of our trunk main that was likely at capacity. And so we needed to look at the rest of our system to look at upgrades to the capacity. And when I say capacity, I mean, where do we need to increase the diameter of pipes in the ground? And so when we started putting together the full scope, we realized that we had an outdated INI study from 2011, which practices, it should be roughly 10 years between doing that. And it's a lot of the same type of information at the same time. And so I added the INI portion, and then Michael was astute enough to say, hey, we also need to update our sanitary sewer management plan, our SSMP, which also includes a lot of the same similar information. And so we combined all three of those efforts, but I had only initially budgeted $60,000 for the capacity study. And so we're getting economics by adding these other two studies, and they're, the SSMP is a new, they were always optional and encouraged, but as of 2022, we have to have one now. And so Michael pointed that out, and so that's why it's expanded beyond what we budgeted.
Okay, so A-plus for Michael, and then so the $99,000, is that on top of the $60,000 that you already
No, that's, okay. So it will be, and we'll be looking for, I mean, I guess it'll be closer to $49,000 with the contingency budget adjustment.
Okay, got it. Thank you very much for that clarification on that. And then finally, I just have a question about sole sourcing. So why didn't we, I see that we have a proposal for engineering services, but why didn't we do an RFP for this?
So that's a good question. So our RFPs were not required at this dollar amount to go out for proposals.
What's the threshold?
$100,000, okay. Yeah. And so, and this job did grow a little bit. Back when it was smaller, MKN also did Grover Beach's sewer system master plan. So they have that information, they have that model. They also work as our district engineer, because we don't staff a district engineer, even though I am a licensed engineer, that I don't work in that capacity for the district. And so MKN is our engineer by extension of staff. And so, through that intimate knowledge of the district's system, there's efficiencies in having MKN do this work. And so that's why it was sole sourced. And because this grew, I don't want to qualify it as this. Some of these smaller jobs, if it was at the 50, 60,000, if you make engineers go through a full RFP, they don't want it. They're annoyed by that. It's a pretty big effort to put something like that together. It's not like just quoting something. It's they have to understand what they're saying and what they're looking at in order. So they're spending thousands of dollars to put that proposal together, and so that it's just a balancing act. And so this one, We didn't intend to go out for RFP, but it grew. So that is an option for your board if you want to direct us to go out. And that's not my recommendation, but if you would feel better about it, we could do RFPs on it.
No, that satisfies me at least. I just know that that's a common question that we often get from the public. So
yeah.
I just wanted to have that on record of where we were with that. So are there any other follow-up questions?
Just curious, it says that isolate the flow contributions that may be originating from the Arroyo Grande Creek between manhole C20 and C20A. Where are those, Matt?
Those manholes are located off of Highway 1 and Halcyon. There's a big seed farm. It's kind of in between Halcyon and Valley Road. Those manholes are located right next to Arroyo Grande Creek. So we could there is a potential
the creek
for
when we had a lot of rain.
Yes, there is a potential for the creek to infiltrate the either the manholes or the sewer line that runs under the creek there.
Okay. All right, I was just curious.
I'm good, thank you.
All right, then let's go ahead and open up public comment. Would anyone like to come forward and comment on item 6B?
I know nothing.
We need you to come up to the microphone there.
Okay. Hi, I'm Christine Fink, Oceano resident. And years ago, Pismo tried to co-opt this, I believe, right, when it was built. What year was that? I'm impressed that you guys are so on this, because that was quite a while before you did the study in 2011, and I think it was before that, right?
So typically the way we would do this is we'll collect your questions and then we'll have staff respond at the end rather
than
having a dialogue. So you have a question about when's the last time we did the study before 2011?
I just wondered when it was built. I've forgotten. I'm old.
65.
Okay. Great. Do you want to respond? Even though Director Austin...
So the treatment plant was... the organization started in... The district was formed in 1963, construction commenced in 1964, and the plant went into service in 1965. So that's how long the plant has been in existence.
So there was a remodeled something.
And hold on just a second. So it's important that you come to the mic if you have another question. Just because the people at home need to hear what's going on.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, we'll take a courteous public members any day of the week, so thank you for that. All right, so we'll close public comment and bring this back to the board for discussion and possible action. Would anyone like to make a motion or have a discussion?
I have no discussion. I'm ready to make a motion whenever.
Please do.
We're ready. Okay. Then I move that we approve and authorize the district administrator to enter into professional service agreement with Michael K. Nunley & Associates in the amount of $99,488. Do we want separate or separate motions for this?
Keith is saying no.
Okay, thank you. And then to authorize the district administrator to approve a specific contingency for the project up to 10% or $9,949 for the total project amount of $109,437.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Nope. All right, roll call, please.
Director Karen Bright?
Yes.
Director Karen Ray Russell?
Yes.
Director Linda Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Let's move on to item 6C. This is District Administrator and Plant Operations Report. Who's going first?
I'll go first. Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator Report. I've got a few updates. It's on the redundancy project. It's several operational aspects of the project are delayed currently. None of the new processes can be brought online without the damaged secondary clarifier, so we're kind of stuck in a holding pattern before we can start any of the new biological process. But the electrical work and site grading, that work continues, so the contractor's still active on site. And then they're also scheduling the paving repairs for the site as well, which will be a The site's pretty dusty and dirty now. I'm sure staff's tired of 3 years of their car being dirty. Some miscellaneous items. So we continue to meet and coordinate with the Central Coast Blue Project team. And staff is meeting with Wallace Group, LAFCO, and OCSD to discuss taking wastewater from Pacific Dunes RV Resort. And that's the RV resort just south of the treatment plant, kind of on the backside of the dunes, adjacent to the ag fields. And so they're not currently tied to any collection system, and so they're wanting to be annexed in and provide service, which it's primarily an OCSD-led effort, and then we just have to concur to take their wastewater.
Are they on septic?
I don't know what they're on.
They have their own treatment plant. They put in a small treatment plant that they have, but I think the state said they have to.
Yeah, so they were contacted by the regional board, and basically they're being mandated to either do substantial upgrades or join some other system. And so they hired Wallace Group to assist them in this. And so LAFCO and OCSD, well, actually the meeting's tomorrow morning, that we all get on the first call to start discussing this. It's pretty standard. We haven't had a lot of it. There was a neighborhood actually in rural AG, I'm drawing a blank on it, but there was another community that was also mandated by the regional board to try to connect, but it was a little bit too far outside of the city of AG, and the city decided not to allow them to annex in. And so that may be the outcome here as well. It depends on whether Oceano allows them to come into their service area.
Thank you.
And then there were no plant tours, and the next meeting we'll have another update on the secondary clarifier issues, and other than that, the only known would be regular business. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Jones for his operations report.
All right. Good evening, ladies of the board. Michael Jones, plant superintendent, presenting the plant operations report. During the reporting period of July 1st through July 31st, there were no violations of the district's district's National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit to report. All process values were within permit limitations. All of our monthly plant data for July 2023, again, are well within permit limitations. Some operation and maintenance tasks that staff performed are, we checked and marked underground service alerts. Our Duperron control panel AC unit was installed by J.D. Bardo. The centrifuge vibration absorber pads installed, maintained and monitored our aeration basins. We set up and prepped our RDT tie-in on the west side of the H&M building and then returned to normal operation. And then we prepped the RDT tie-in on the east side of the heating and mixing building and then returned to normal operation. We assisted the fire crew with brush disposal. We replaced the strainer baskets and installed a new one. We transferred water from the aeration basin 1 to aeration basin 2. We removed the blockage at our Grit King. The fence line clearing was performed by the CMC fire crew. We rinsed, labeled, and stored chemical totes. We rebuilt our Amiod filter pump gearbox. We disposed of old hoses and replaced with new. Installed the new signs at the front gate, and we replaced the boiler air filter. Operations staff completed a multitude of work orders and preventative maintenance. Moving on to training, staff participated in training on the airs and blowers, and new OIT staff members continued shadow training with operations and lab staff. Operations staff did have some call-outs during the month of July. On July 1st, we had a high digester number 2 sump alarm. Upon arrival, operations staff performed a visual inspection to confirm the high level in digester number 2 sump. The operator began to wash down the sump and pump down manually, monitored until normal operation returned. On July 4th, we had another call out for the high digester number 2 sump alarm. Upon arrival, operations staff performed a visual inspection to confirm the high level in digester number 2 sump. Operations staff began to wash down the sump and pump down manually, monitored until normal operation returned. On those callouts, we did find that our floats were had been chewed on from a rat, so that has been repaired, and we haven't had a call out. Haven't had a call out since. On July 11th, we had a high ORP alarm. Upon arrival, operation staff observed and ensured the system was back to normal following the alarm. Operation staff continued to monitor the system prior to resetting the alarm. On July 6th, we had a low pressure reclaim water. Operation staff bypassed the filter, pressure returned to normal, and alarm was reset. And then on July 28th, we had a power outage at the plant. Upon arrival, operation staff checked all plant processes, monitored and reset alarms as necessary. Power was restored at 4:30 a.m. Moving on to some of the non-serious violations that have occurred in 2023, we have had two that expired, so we are down to just one violation, which is due to expire October 19th. So that's some good news. Moving down to staff, I've included some photos. This first photo is of one of our most tenured operators, Billy Romhild. He's modeling our brand new cart that took almost a year to receive.
Oh, that's nice. So what do you do with these?
Just cruise around, the plant, yeah. No drag races, but just carrying, they assist with
just
carrying tools and equipment, stuff
that's
like that.
That's pretty cool.
In the next photo, I have operator Chris Rigoni and one of our operator in trainings, Nick Kurakawa, cleaning out our hedges in front of the office. And the next photo is of our chlorine contact tank. Operation staff was performing the draining and rinsing of the serpentine channels. In the next photo, that's of operator Everardo and... I'm not sure. It's hard to tell with the Tyvek suit, but they're on top of our fixed film reactor performing some monthly maintenance. And with that, that concludes my report, and we're able to answer any questions.
Any questions?
No, very thorough. Thank you.
I just have a quick one on the miscellaneous from your, on the Pacific Dunes Resort. The line would have to go under the creek, right?
Yeah, so...
under the creek and then over?
That concept will be determined by them and Wallace. So they would either have to go under the creek or somehow go up to the 22nd Street Bridge and get an attachment, potentially. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't know if they're intending on any of that, but that would be an alternative to get across the creek.
Wouldn't that be a lengthy process to try to dig up the creek? I mean, wouldn't you have to go through a lot of...
So they would have to get permits, and the way that would be constructed is it would be through if they went under the creek, they would bore that pipe. So they would dig pits on either side, and then most likely either directionally bore or jack and drill that pipe under the creek to a receiving pit on the other side. But yes, they wouldn't be able to trench through the levees and through the creek and bury a pipe.
How that would work. Well, you say there's another area up. Yeah. Where there is a pipe under the creek?
Yeah, so our original collection system that you asked Michael the question earlier between C20 and C20A, I'm sorry that the mic keeps hitting the wind of my breath, but yes, it goes under the creek, and that's not uncommon. I mean, you do have to cross creeks, and you can either go over them on a bridge, either a dedicated sewer bridge, which would be unlikely in this case just because they wouldn't. The conditions out there, it floods, so you wouldn't want a standalone bridge. But so they'll have to decide that option.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
All right. Well, then that takes us to board member communications. Any communications?
I have none.
None from me.
I just want to say it's really cool to see that serpentine channel because I have never seen that before, and that is when my son toured the plant. And Jeremy was explaining all of this to him. That particular device was what inspired him, and he is now in week 3 at Long Beach State studying environmental engineering because of all y'all.
Wow.
So, it's that thing that somehow just sparked that I want to do this. So, I think that's really great. So, thank you to this crew, as always.
Yeah. You never know.
You just don't. So, that takes us to item 8. This is closed session, and I'll let our attorney go ahead and announce that. You thought you were getting off without saying something, huh, Keith?
Thank you, Madam President. We will now adjourn to closed session for conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, significant exposure to litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D4, just one case.
And with that, we will adjourn to closed session. We'll report out at our next meeting if there's any reportable action. Thank you.